favorite radio station, KPFK, please consider donating your vehicle to us, whether it's operational or not, because your donation helps KPFK as well as present you with an opportunity to write it off of your taxes. And if you would like to donate and get more information, please give us a call at 877-KPFK-AUTO. Once again, that's 877-KPFK-AUTO. Peace.
Hello, and you are listening to Eco Justice Radio on KPFK Los Angeles, a project of SoCal 350 Climate Action. Our show presents environmental and climate stories from a social justice frame, featuring voices not necessarily heard on mainstream media. Eco Justice Radio acknowledges that we recorded this show on the traditional territory of the Ahachaman people and all of their relatives in the place we call San Juan Capistrano. Welcome, I'm Jack Eit. On today's show, Honduras in Resistance, a case study in U.S. imperialism and corruption, we feature a conversation with Graham Russell, co-founder and director of Rights Action. Graham Russell, based out of Canada, has worked on human rights and justice, humanitarian relief, land defense, and environmental issues in Central America since 1985. He is director of Rights Action, focusing particularly on Guatemala and Honduras. He's also a non-practicing lawyer and part-time professor at the University of Northern British Columbia. Rights Action supports land and environmental and human rights defense struggles in Central America, resisting harms caused by sectors of the unjust global economy, mining, hydroelectric dams, African palm, sugarcane, bananas, tourism, sweatshop factories, and economic warfare, also called sanctions, of the U.S., Canada, and other Global North countries and actors. The United States has always been a speak-softly-and-carry-a-big-stick purveyor of imperial might, a term attributed to Theodore Roosevelt. Speaking softly meant the use of peaceful diplomacy, negotiations. The big stick is, of course, today's nuclear war machine. In Roosevelt's day, this required negotiations punctuated by intelligent forethought and just action. Today, we have manufactured intelligence and specifically unjust, hegemonic, and violent actions towards other countries without actual negotiations. We kidnap leaders, as in Venezuela, based on fake charges of drug trafficking. We speak loudly for a minute, don't wait for an answer, and then invade if they don't comply with whatever whim our fearless and heedless leaders demand. This is what we did in Iran. In this hemisphere, the speak loudly and wield a big nuclear stick is in full swing with Secretary of War's Greater North America push. Not to be confused with Israel's Greater Israel push, really. Pete Hegseth, whose days are numbered as the military, is in active rebellion of his heedless war crimes. Stay tuned for that. He's also the man behind these unprovoked attacks, bombing civilians and their infrastructure, turning the U.S. into a cardboard bully villain in a losing effort to advance the faltering U.S. empire. Here he is on the Greater America push.
That is why President Trump has drawn a new strategic map from Greenland to the Gulf of America to the Panama Canal and its surrounding countries. At the Department of War, we call this strategic map the Greater North America. Why? Because every sovereign nation and territory north of the equator, from Greenland to Ecuador and from Alaska to Guyana, is not part of the global south. Is a security perimeter in this great neighborhood that we all live in. Each one of these countries border either the North Atlantic or the North Pacific. Each one of these countries sits north of the two basic geographic barriers that exist in this region, the Amazon and the Andes Mountains. This is basic geography that we don't in schools as much as we should. And it restores our North-South relations, and we must get it right. In the North, the United States must enhance posture and presence in cooperation with you and our sovereign partners to defend our shared immediate security perimeter. In the South, meaning south of the equator, the other side of this great neighborhood.
Greater America push. Here's a clip of the Garifuna Waranawa New Year's ceremony from the village of Kusuna on the north coast of Honduras. So welcome, Graham Russell, to EcoJustice Radio.
Thank you for having me on, Jack.
Yes, you're co-founder and director of Rights Action, who, according to your website, funding and supporting human rights, justice, land, and environmental defense struggles in Guatemala and Honduras. So a lot is happening with the United States. Donald Trump and his cabal have big plans. There was the Shield of the Americas gathering, which they call a counter-cartel coalition. 17 different Latin American countries. Sounds like a lot, but it's definitely not the majority of Latin American countries in Central and South America and the Caribbean, focused on using their militaries to deal with whatever situation comes up, boat strikes in the Caribbean and Pacific, invading Venezuela and kidnapping their leader, Nicolas Maduro, and his wife. They've been strangling economically Cuba, threatening Mexico and Colombia, bombings in Ecuador and on the Colombian border. And all the while, the United States and Israel are bombing Iran mercilessly. Now, just to catch people up, Trump also put his thumb on the election scale in Honduras as his favored right-wing candidate, Nasri Tito Asfura, despite technical problems and allegations of fraud, became president of Honduras and joined in on the counter-cartel coalition. We'll talk about more about this election and its ramifications in a bit. But first, can you tell us from your perspective what the cultivation of U.S. military force, lethal violent force, means for hemispheric affairs?
I'll throw something out just off the top. I don't think any of these new alliances, the Shield of the Americas, et cetera, really have anything to do with drugs. And I'll just throw that out. There's probably a bit of grayness in that discussion, but it's as a generalization, this is just a specific alliance of leaders and elites in certain countries beholden to this version of the United States. And this version of the United States is sort of, in many ways, historic U.S. imperialism across the Americas, and it's on steroids. So it's an extreme version, but there's nothing new with what the U.S. is doing. It's just doing it at an extreme level, and it has serious ramifications inside the United States as well. But it has really nothing to do with drugs as a generalization. I'd be glad to discuss that further. And actually, Honduras is a horrifically brutal case study to prove my point. So the ramifications are awful because it's sort of U.S. imperialism in the Americas, call it the Monroe Doctrine, the Dunroe Doctrine, or whatever. It's just this rich, powerful country. And Canada, for all the wrong reasons, is either supporting the U.S. on this. I am Canadian, mostly an American citizen, but I was born and raised in Canada. Canada is doing the wrong thing in most countries, or we're keeping our head out of the news to try and not have some of this stuff stick to us. But it's just the same old rich, powerful northern countries' interests on steroids. And it's fundamentally, including these military alliances with this cabal of undemocratic, military-backed right-wing governments, it's about resources. It's about access to markets. It's about access to rich land to produce things for export. And it's about oil and gas, fundamentally. And actually, I think this President Trump, you know, Trump administration round two, 2.0, has actually been a bit more explicit about that and more honest about it than previous administrations, when where the United States invaded, killed a lot of people, and then kidnapped the elected leader of Venezuela. The media was, well, this is getting rid of an autocrat, it's getting rid of a dictator. And Trump was like, no, it's about oil.
Exactly.
He just kept saying it. The Canadian government said, well, we will leave it to the U.S. to decide if they're violating international law or not. But that was a pretty bad regime over there. No, it's about oil. So there's an interesting quote that we've used a lot recently from Arundhati Roy, where in reference to Palestine, but it could be in reference to everything we're talking about, the charade of Western liberal democracy lies under the rubble with tens of thousands of Palestinians. And I think what the government of the U.S. is doing now with its allies, Canada and Western European allies, who either openly support or we keep our heads down and try and get out of the media spotlight, it's the charade of Western liberal democracy on steroids.
No, and they're just brutalizing civilians, civilian infrastructure, murdering journalists. You know, just today was another. It's just ongoing. You know, you bring up the charade of drug trafficking, and for, you know, particularly in Central America, we'd have to mention Juan Orlando Hernandez, who ruled over Honduras with an iron fist for 8 years, two terms. He wasn't allowed to get the second term, but they changed that. And that's what they deposed Mel Zelaya back in 2009. So he subverted the Honduran military and police and put them to service to some of the most powerful criminal organizations on the planet. Yep. So what do you think of Juan Orlando's comeback in a world supposedly at war with drug cartels and criminal gangs named as terrorist organizations?
Well, just puts your finger right on the heart and center of the lie. It really is a lie that there's a fundamental concern in the U.S. about drug cartels. I think this has always been true in a very significant way. And I don't question a whole lot of serious people in the U.S. and Canada who are concerned about illegal drugs and all the harms that come from it. There's some very serious people who take this seriously. There's been a lot of harms from drugs. The whole drug issue begins and ends in the U.S. mainly, but also Canada, because we are the major market of particularly cocaine, but now fentanyl and opium. And what we've tried to do is externalize all of the blame. The problem is over there with those people who produce it and export it to us. We're not dealing with the fact that we are the number one market in the world. And other people have talked and written a lot more about this than me. But having said that, I come back to the earlier comment in your question. The shield of the Americas, as if it's some real serious effort to block drug trafficking, all you have to do is look at the case of Honduras. And I'll add in a Canadian angle. The coup in 2009 that deposed the elected government of Honduras was supported by the U.S. primarily and very explicitly by Canada as well.
Right.
And what happened, what followed was 12 years and 7 months, so almost 13 years, basically, and this sounds like too many adjectives, but it tells it all. This was an undemocratic, military-backed, drug trafficking, open for global business government that Canada and the U.S. called endlessly in international forums democratic allies. 13 years of these lies and deceits. Yeah. All of the elections in Honduras were corrupted and undemocratic. The first election to bring in the known drug trafficker, Pepe Lobo, and then the next two elections to bring in and keep in power Juan Orlando Hernandez, and I'll come back to him. And then finally, they had legitimate elections, and they had a decent government for 4 years. Yeah. Unbelievably, due to the courage and strength of the Honduran people and their allies who had got finally able to get rid of this Canadian and U.S.-backed drug trafficking regime in power. And President Juan Orlando Hernandez was the head of, he was into drug trafficking before he came into politics, and then he continued to run a drug trafficking cartel from the president's office. This was known the entire time, as Canada and the U.S. called it a democratic ally. And why? Well, we'll come back to it later on in the program. It has to do with keeping the country open for business, a political ally of the North, but then business, mining, tourism, African palm, etc. Investments from Canada and the U.S. grew in all of these sectors during the 13 years of this drug trafficking regime in power. And just to put a fine point on the elections last December, I think it's better to call when we say that the US weighed in on the elections and sort of swayed them, that was almost electoral regime change, what the US
Right,
did.
absolutely.
That candidate was nowhere near a position. He was the distant third candidate. And the incumbent party, Libre, was in sort of a neck and neck race with this middle of the roadish liberal party.
Right.
US went after both of them, brought his guy to the top. He threatened to impoverish Honduras even more if Astudillo wouldn't win the elections. There was corruption on election day, which ultimately didn't matter. And Astudillo wins the so-called elections, which was an electoral regime coup, regime change, in my opinion. And then part of this threat to the country or message to the powerful sectors is he released Juan Orlando Hernandez. This is spectacular. Like, it's horrific, but it's spectacular. 1 month later, the invasion of Venezuela takes place in the name of going after a drug trafficking president. The media just spews this stuff almost like an office of propaganda, both in Canada and the US. There were some exceptions to this, but not much. And then meanwhile, a month before, when the U.S. government pardoned Juan Orlando Hernandez, who ran a drug cartel from the president's office supported by Canada and the U.S., it barely made a ripple in the news. Well, that's a bit of an exaggeration. It did get some coverage. So I think the release of Juan Orlando Hernandez is not just horrific for the people of Honduras. It's also a boost to drug traffickers across the Americas. As long as you keep on the good side of the colossus in the north and do some of their dirty business, they'll probably give you a free pass to continue doing business as usual. So So Honduras is being thrown off a cliff right now as a country, and the well-being of the majority population is going off a cliff all over again because of what the U.S. has just done, and the West, including Canada, has watched this with silent complicity.
It's truly throwing people off a cliff, you know, figuratively speaking, but it's almost actual. In my personal experience, I've lived in Honduras and been back and forth for many times, particularly out in La Mosquitia. Prior to 2009, there was drug trafficking out on the seas and there were boats passing. That's always been happening, but it never came into the villages, into the towns, and never put in service the people who throwing dollars at the young people who don't have any real options. Fishing is, you know, the fisheries have been exhausted by international fishing, and the lobster industry has been crashing. And, you know, there's a lot of challenges that people out in La Mosquitia face. But following 2009, suddenly these drug traffickers made home in the villages. And my last trip there was extremely harrowing because it was pretty clear the presence was everywhere. I was in Puerto Lempira, and you know, they definitely had made home there. And you know, I'm not sure if the last 4 years prior, you know, had made any push against getting them out. The organized crime, once they get there, it's pretty tough to root them out. But now, open for business, as that term has been used by them as well as you, is happening. So
two quick comments, because this notion of throwing the well-being of the majority population off the cliff again, this is what happened in 2009, as you're referring to. The drug trafficking through Central America didn't begin in 2009. No. It just took off on steroids, bringing this regime in power and keeping in power and lying about it. And we'll get into this probably discussing some of the open for business, including tourism, how the problem of tourism on the North Shore and Roatan and all that didn't begin in 2009. It predates it quite extensively, but it exploded on steroids post-2009 with this U.S.-Canadian global business-friendly regime that also happened to be trafficking drugs. But let us not forget that the forced migrancy crisis that became all the news in the U.S. by the mid-2010s, so a few years after 2009, Honduras was the more people fled Honduras per capita than any other country in Latin America, leaving aside Mexico, which has a complicated history because of the shared border. but more than Guatemala, more than El Salvador, more than South America, more than anywhere per capita by far, the most significant number of people being forced to flee home and country were from Honduras during this period from 2009 to 2022. And that's this is the byproduct. This is the direct byproduct. And that forced migrancy will begin again now as the U.S. and the West have brought back in this horrific government, and the fears of everyone are the same. And another, just a quick comment, the government that was just a left power, the Libre Party, as I said, was a very decent government. They couldn't stop drug trafficking in 4 years. They were barely making inroads into getting rid of, little by little, 4 years is not a lot of time, making inroads into starting to weed out corruption in the judicial system, corruption in the military, corruption in the police, which we'll probably go on to talk about. And they were doing it slowly and carefully. And were they a perfect government? No. They were just beginning to make inroads to take back their government and state and the institutions of institutionality of a country. And now it's all been thrown off a cliff again.
Yeah. And what I was going to say, as a rejoinder to what you were saying, the reason people were leaving is because of this impunity, the murder mm-hmm. rate, the organized crime in the cities, like the cities, Tegucigalpa, San Pedro Sula. It's almost unlivable, whereas they, you know, they were never perfect. There's always been stuff going on. But as you said, they became totally dangerous. If you had even a decent car, the worry about getting carjacked, all these murders, nobody being convicted, nothing, you know. So rooting out that corruption is really a big part of making people want to stay in the country.
Yeah.
So we got to take a break for our radio listeners, so we'll be back to talk more about what's happening in Honduras and Central America.
Hey, listeners, quick break here. We hope that you're enjoying EcoJustice Radio. We air on KPFK Los Angeles. Stay connected by subscribing to EcoJustice Radio on all major podcast apps and visit our website, ecojusticeradio.org, to check out previous shows and guests. Get connected with us on social media. Today, you are listening to Honduras in Resistance, a case study in U.S. imperialism and corruption. I'm your host, Jack Eit, and we feature a conversation with Graham Russell, co-founder and director of Rights Action, doing land, environment, and human rights defense work in Central America.
The militaristic component of the Wanarago, as we know it today, I think has a lot to do with the experience of the Garifuna people.
Drummers position themselves near the front door or the veranda of each house, with the lead drummer in the middle. The song leader and chorus always stand behind or to the side of the drummers. Dancers position themselves opposite the drummers and embellish traditional dances with individual stylized movements. Dancers enter the ring one after the other, each challenging the primero drummer to rhythmically interpret his movement.
Wanarga is the most difficult rhythm to perform because usually in other rhythms, the drummer plays and the dancer dance to that rhythm. With the Wanarga, the drummer plays for the dancer. So it becomes a challenging thing between the drummer to always be on top of his game to catch whatever the dancer throws at him.
Okay, I'm back with Graham Russell from Rights Action talking Honduras. So Rights Action does a lot of work with the Garifuna people. Can you tell about their Caribbean coastal way of life and the actually amazing coexistence in villages stretching all the way between Belize and Nicaragua? It's really just an amazing way of life of these people that I discovered a long time ago and really fell in love with. So if you could tell us a little bit about the background.
Well, I'll do my best. We in Rights Action, and I just, as hard and complicated, and let's not kid ourselves, sad and depressing as a lot of this work is on an ongoing basis, we're a group that chips away at it from Canada and the US. And Once you do this work, things become an honor and a privilege. And it's been a privilege and an honor to work with a group like OFRENE, the main sort of the fraternal organization of Black Honduras, as they were called. This is the most sort of, it is the leading sort of grassroots Garifuna organization in Honduras. They were established in the late 70s, and I know their backstory a fair bit. We started supporting them and working with them directly in 1998. And like we do in all our work, we do a combination of direct grassroots funding to the land, rights, culture, and justice defenders that we work with. And we do north-south advocacy work, trying to tell, because most struggles we support have to do one way or another with the role of Canada and the US and our private sectors in these countries. It could be mining, it could be tourism, it could be ag industry, it could be hydroelectric dams. It's most of the communities we support, like the Garifuna, are being harmed and affected, obviously by their own elites, but their own elites work in conjunction with global investors, banks, and companies in these different sectors of the economy. And so our work is always a combination of direct funding and human rights accompaniment, along with doing north-south education and advocacy work. So we started working with the Garifuna and the OFRENE organization in 1998, and we're still able to keep on supporting and working with them today.
Well, Graham Russ, there's some good work that you've been doing out there. Can you let our listeners know how they can, follow your work, contribute to your work, and you really keep people apprised. So anyone with any interest in what's happening in Central America, you're really good with the emails.
Well, what we try and do all the time, whether we're talking about issues, struggles we support in Honduras or Guatemala, so we always try and connect the dots between why what's going on in Honduras and Guatemala and Central America is really connected to what's going on in so many different places of the world. Yeah. And as opposed to being an isolated, different, special thing, it's just one more region that is being sort of devastated by global political, military, and economic forces. And we stay with it. We don't drop what we're doing there to turn our attention to the Middle East, Cuba, or Venezuela. We try and connect the dots that we understand how interconnected all this stuff is. I recommend people subscribe to our listserv, which they can do through our website, rightsaction.org, or review the website, get familiar with our work. And if you like what you see, then subscribe to our listserv. Primarily is my first recommendation. You can follow us to a lesser degree on Twitter, so X, so Facebook and Instagram. But the listserv is the best source of regular information all the time. And then people can reach out and send their questions or comments to us at info@rightsaction.org for more information and take it from there.
Great. Well, thank you for coming on Eco Justice Radio and sharing with us. It's important to bring to light what all these really unfortunate entities are doing to truly the Honduran people have gifted me so much in my life. And it's amazing how much they face these difficulties. I mean, it's an extremely impoverished place. People live with very little, but then we have these entities coming and taking what little they have left. I think it's beautiful, the work that you're doing, and I thank you for it.
Well, I appreciate the time and space, Jack, and I look forward to keeping in touch.
Great.
Hey, listeners, to check out the extended recording of this show or to explore our other shows, visit our website, ecojusticeradio.org, and subscribe to our podcast. This has been Eco Justice Radio and our show, Honduras in Resistance, a case study in U.S. imperialism and corruption. Thank you to Graham Russell, and thank you to our listeners for joining us. Please connect with us on social media at Eco Justice Radio, SoCal350, and Wilder Utopia. If you like what you've heard, you want others to be informed, subscribe and share the episodes. You've been listening to Eco Justice Radio, a project of SoCal 350. The show can be found on KPFK Audio Archives, all major podcast apps, and at ecojusticeradio.org. Executive producer, myself, Jack Ike, co-host, Carrie Kim, and engineer and original music by Blake Quake Beats. And until next time, remember, the power is yours.
You're invited to tune in to The QR Code with your hosts, Ramses Ja and Q Ward.
The Q in the QR code goes by the name of Q Ward.
The voice you just heard is the R in the QR code. He goes by the name Ramses Ja.
Every Monday through Thursday at 6 a.m.
Be sure to join us next time as we share our news with our voice from our perspective. And until then,
peace.
Peace.
Hi, this is Lonnie Jordan.